Introduction. Recycling Organics at the Community Scale. This book is designed for practitioners of community-scale composting. It was created as a technical resource for farmers, designers, service providers, and organics recycling entrepreneurs and advocates of all types, with a focus on developing small and even micro-scale infrastructure that can enable communities to return sustenance to soils in their local food system. The main scope of the book is dedicated to compost system options and design, from basic sizing and layout to advanced techniques such as aerated static pile composting. Management techniques and operational considerations are also covered, including testing, developing analytically based compost recipes, and system-specific best management practices. As a consultant working with composters in the development and startup phase, I have found that end uses and market planning, even when applied to small-scale composting scenarios, is extremely useful, and so the book concludes with that subject. As you will see, community-scale composting is coming of age, marked by a profusion of new interest in agripreneurial composting ventures. Great respect is owed to its early practitioners and thought leaders, those who have remained unshaken in their vision of an ecologically integral closed-loop food system. Thanks to them, there are an abundance of models and experiences to build from, and build we have. Throughout this book, we'll invite several of these practitioners to give us a tour of their operations, so you can better understand what makes them tick. But before we start, what is this movement we're calling community composting? Community composting has been labeled a buzzword, and I think it has truly earned this status. Take two things, composting and community, each held in high esteem by the eco-conscious of today, and two things that have never been more needed on our planet, and put them together. This is why we have a movement on our hands. Although the main focus of this book and of community composters is on growing the movement through practical implementation, there is an ongoing discussion about how we as a movement identify ourselves. Much of this discussion centers on the word community and how it relates to composters, or rather, how composters relate to their communities. Early on in writing, I chose to use the term community scale as a way to define the book's scope, rather than community-based composting, which is open to much broader interpretation. The ideas behind community-based development are quite comprehensive with a whole history, philosophy, and methodology of their own. For example, asset-based community development, ABCD, is a methodology for engaging with and building from the existing assets of communities. In many ways, truly community-based composting is the gold standard of community composting, ideals I myself believe in and strive for, but on which I am by no means an expert. For this reason, while the book is designed to be useful to those who identify as community-based composters, I deliberately chose to not use the term for the book. Scale, on the other hand, is technical and quantifiable in nature, areas where I have significant expertise to share as a consultant and designer. Since this is a technical manual, community-scale composting seemed to appropriately fit the underlying theme of the book. So what is a community-scale composting system? Inherent in the concept is the idea that the system has the capacity to capture and recycle a community's organic waste stream. In reality, most community-scale composting systems target a specific portion of the waste stream, usually the most local, and usually the food scraps and yard waste of the community, as opposed to human or animal wastes. There is a whole methodology to identifying, estimating, and targeting organic streams that is outlined in chapters 4, 5, and 12. Community-scale composting may involve one main composter who grows to meet the needs of the community as program participation develops, or may involve a series of partner composters who collectively service the community. Either way, inherent in this scale of composting is infrastructure that is simple, diverse, and dispersed, principles that unite this movement with other modalities of ecologically modeled thinking. Community-scale composting. The fundamental building blocks of composting systems are the same, regardless of scale. A quick note. Throughout this book, I use the word composting to refer generally to the recycling of organic materials. Although at times it is used to refer specifically to composting systems and processes, when speaking generally, it can also refer to other methods of organics recycling. In every system, organic refuse is generated, collected, and then composted. These three basic components are necessary whether the source comprises a single residence composting food scraps in the backyard or all of the organics generated by a city. Everyone on the planet generates organic wastes, just as we all eat and breathe. A 2014 estimate by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency reports that 38.4 million tons of food scraps are generated in the United States each year, with only 5.1% recovered and recycled. In that wasted material is embodied tremendous resource potential. Naturally, an enormous diversity of systems to capture, transport, and recycle organics has developed from this resource niche. But composting wouldn't exist without the fourth fundamental component of these systems, the end uses. These include a wide range of compost applications and markets, as well as other forms of soil fertility, animal feed, and energy. The subject of this book is organics recycling systems composed of these four basic components, handling organics at volumes above the scale of a single home and below the scale of a whole large city. In other words, community scale. When planned appropriately, community scale composting systems can handle the organics generated by a specific population, neighborhood, or region. Across the United States, composters operating at this scale are emerging at a growing pace, as is an awareness of the benefits and services provided by composting. In my experience, this sector of composters is typically focused on producing a very high-grade end product. Small batch, horticultural, boutique, organic, bicycle-powered, artisan, community-based. There is no end to the ways in which these producers can be classified. What is increasingly apparent from this boom is that, one, there remains an abundance of waste. Two, awareness of the problem is growing. And three, people are actively intervening to build the systems to collect, recycle, and reuse available organic resources in their communities. The rapid growth and maturation of composting has led to a healthy discussion about what a functional and efficient organics recycling infrastructure can and should look like. One result of this discussion has been the solidification of a self-identifying segment of composters, referring to themselves as community composters. Appropriately, the concept of community composting seems to have developed organically and with no single particular origin. Rather, organizations, projects, and even news articles appear to have taken on the term for its succinctness, though with their own slightly varying definitions. I first started using the term to describe the services we provided while working at the Highfield Center for Composting. At first, I found it hard to define exactly what we were doing, but clearly it involved composting, community, education, and infrastructure. Over time, I learned to describe what we did as supporting the development of community composting programs, and eventually our motto became, "Your partner in community composting." It wasn't until the 2012 U.S. Composting Council Conference in Orlando, Florida, that the presence of a plethora of similarly minded practitioners around the United States helped the concept truly come into focus. I wasn't the only one whose eyes were opened at that conference. Within the year, conference calls and planning for the first national convergence of community composters were ongoing. In the fall of 2013, the composting industry's leading publication, BioCycle, and the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, ISLR, hosted the first Cultivating Community Composting Forum in Columbus, Ohio, Convergence, that has continued annually. Defining organic and organics. One definition of the word organic is from life, something that is or was once alive. Organics refers to once-living materials, the raw materials of composting. Organic has, of course, come to represent a biologically based method of agriculture that has a list of certified practices associated with it. By this definition, organic compost would require entirely certified organic inputs to be labeled organic. However, standards of compost management, if met, produce compost that is suitable for use on organic farms. For more on this topic, see the Producing Compost Suitable for Use on Organic Farms sidebar on page 128. In 2014, Highfield Center for Composting, HCC, and ILSR wrote the first comprehensive guide on the subject, Growing Local Fertility, A Guide to Community Composting, which Brenda Platt of ILSR, Jen Davis, and I co-authored, and from which portions of this book are adapted. We faced the question of defining community composting for both ourselves and our audience, which took a great deal of time and thought. We decided that it was critical to involve other community composting practitioners and advocates in the process, and reached out to several of the players that were involved in the development of the National Community Composting Forum for their input. The team also agreed that the development of defining principles, rather than a set of exclusive criteria, would have the greatest long-term impact on the culture of composting as a whole. We wanted the vision for community composting to feel inclusive to the wide array of practitioners who identify with the term, and ideally, to act as a standard of social and environmental ethics toward which anyone in the organics recycling sector could strive. The team arrived at the following set of core community composting principles. 1. Resources recovered. Waste is reduced. Food scraps and other organic materials are diverted from disposal and composted. 2. Locally based and closed loop. Organic materials are a community asset and are generated and recycled into compost within the same neighborhood or community. 3. Organic materials returned to soils. Compost is used to enhance local soils, support local food production, and conserve natural ecology by improving soil structure and maintaining nutrients, carbon, and soil microorganisms. 4. Community-scaled and diverse. Composting infrastructure is diverse, distributed, and sustainable. Systems are scaled to meet the needs of a self-defined community. 5. Community engaged, empowered, and educated. Compost programming engages and educates the community in food systems thinking, resource stewardship, or community sustainability while providing solutions that empower individuals, businesses, and institutions to capture organic waste and retain it as a community resource. 6. Community supported. Programming aligns with community goals, such as healthy soils and healthy people, and is supported by the community it serves. The reverse is true, too. A community composting program supports community social, economic, and environmental well-being. What is compost? No book on the subject of composting can escape this inevitable question. The definition of composting that I have been using for a number of years, which is a combination of several definitions I've come across, is the return of organic materials to a rich, stable, humus-like material through a managed oxidative decomposition process that is mediated by microbe metabolism. But compost is much trickier to define. If you've ever purchased compost, you may have ended up with any number of things: rotted manure rife with weed seed, mulch that someone tried to pass off as compost, leaf mold, dehydrated digestate solids, or beautiful, mature, organic matter-rich, earthy, crumbly, black, life-giving. Well, what else? Compost. It's hard to say with any authority what is or isn't compost, because compost has both a history and a future of transformation. It was once something entirely different. Now it's compost, and soon it will yet again be something else. The challenge with defining compost perhaps stems from the definition of composting. The criteria for each of composting's defining traits, organic waste, stability, managed, oxidative, can be met in any number of ways, which are often not the least bit equivalent. Metabolized by microbes might actually be the most straightforward characteristic of compost, and that's saying something. I believe in an inclusive definition. Though looking at the end product of the composting process, I view some composts as being more compost than others. At the very compost end of the spectrum, the material is mature and stable, meaning there is little food energy, carbon, available to microbes from the original parent material. Virtually all of that potential energy has been consumed, and what remains is an enormous population of living, breathing organisms, the most complex forms of carbon, well on their way to becoming those mysterious humic substances, and the non-organic minerals endogenous to the original raw materials. The organisms and stable organic matter in compost contain the building blocks of healthy soil. Embodied within are energy, nutrients, and a structure that mimics a fully developed soil ecosystem capable of sustaining plant life. Compost is both the hardware and the operating system needed for creating healthy soil, ready to support the life of the land. At the sort of compost end of the spectrum are products created in a hurry or with a high percentage of materials that are non-compostable or based in misinformation about the composting process. Often, one or two minor management adaptations can make a huge difference in quality. There may be high levels of non-organic matter, including minerals or plastics, or of the original raw, non-decomposed organic matter. Many scenarios can lead to composts on the low-quality end of the spectrum. Once you know what you're looking for, you'll see examples everywhere you look. While these compost-like materials may offer some value depending on the circumstances, it's important to understand the benefits or drawbacks to using the specific product in a gardening or farming application. Don't waste your time or someone else's utilizing or creating a product that will not produce the desired effects. With some basic knowledge, anybody can reliably produce great material. Throughout this book, I'll cover some of the desirable and undesirable qualities of different composts and the scenarios that lead to these qualities. The cult of compost. For many people, the need to compost, once awakened, is insatiable. Composting calls. It speaks from the beyond, drawing in believers. Seriously, farmers and others who make compost often describe the positive effects composting has on their minds and spirits almost like a meditation or yoga practice. A large number maintain a deep belief in composting as part of a holistic way of life. I share this for a few reasons. First, if you are an inadvertent member of the cult of compost, know you are not alone. We are legions strong and spreading from root to sky. Second, you should know that a species of soil bacterium, Mycobacterium vaccae, releases serotonin. Chris Lowry, a neuroscientist studying the role of bacteria like M. vaccae in serotonin release, describes the effects of the bacteria as basically no different from all the SSRIs, such as Prozac. There are no studies to date about dependency concerns with Mycobacterium, and there are no doubt other microbes with similar effects. Third, to define compost strictly as a substance that has undergone biologically mediated oxidation misses the fact that there is a huge social aspect to composting. Similar intersections between technology, social order, and microbial communities have a long and beautiful history. I'm thinking of the fermentation traditions of the Tarahumara and Lacandon peoples of Mexico. These traditions are also a path to both community and the divine. This is all to say, composting may play a more important role than we recognize in creating greater wellness in our communities. Have no fear in taking on a holistic view, but try to leave the dogma out. Defining this book's focus. This book focuses on recycling systems that include food scraps, the fastest growing area of community-scale composting, rather than systems designed for composting yard wastes, animal manures, or biosolids, sewage. Across the country, 58% of yard wastes are already composted. Animal manures and bedding are usually handled at the home or farm scale, although they certainly play a big role in many food scrap recycling operations as well. And with the growth of backyard animal husbandry, there may be new opportunities for community composters to capture these manures. Human wastes are usually handled at the municipal level or at the home, humanure systems. However, although the focus of this guide is on food scraps, much of the information presented here is informed by on-farm and biosolids composting, and there is a great deal of overlap among composting system types and the raw materials they process. The term food scraps as a best management practice. Food is not waste unless food is wasted. Therefore, the term food waste is a misnomer, despite its widespread use. In transitioning from a waste paradigm to a resource paradigm, the language that we use matters. We are not managing wastes, we are managing resources. When food can be diverted to feed people, food surplus or similar terminology is much better than food waste. A growing number of people use the term food scraps to describe food that is no longer edible by humans, but can still feed animals or microbes, that is, be composted or digested anaerobically. This includes New York's Department of Sanitation, the state of Vermont, and my birthplace of Cambridge, Massachusetts, to name just a few. I advocate that this term, for lack of a better one, be considered a compost best management practice alongside pile monitoring and meeting temperature treatment standards. If composters don't lead the way on this, then how can we expect the general public's ideas about waste to change? Where banana peels go and never come back. The alternative to organics recycling is landfilling and incineration, options that carry a host of festering issues where organics are concerned, not the least of which is that the nutrient value in organics, once wasted, can never again be reclaimed in a useful form. Landfills are a one-way ticket to banana peel hell. Consider that this earth is literally made of stardust, and that stardust somehow developed into the only known life in the universe, and that life is composed of a limited quantity of nutrients that only happen to be in surplus abundance at this time due to a bonanza of fossil fuel energy, and that all of this is happening in the blink of an eye in geological terms. Putting all of the rigorous science of greenhouse gas emissions and toxic leachate polluting groundwater from landfilling organics aside, the story of the broken link between all the life that ever was on this planet and all of the life that ever will be should be enough to convince anyone to compost. It's a really hard message to get across to a wide audience, although I strongly encourage you to try. The waste, make that resource paradigm shift. The recognition that resources are being wasted and that waste is costly to our environment and society is, without a doubt, spreading. Just within the past few years, laws have been enacted banning food scraps from landfills and incinerators in cities such as Seattle, San Francisco, and Portland. At the time of writing, 5 states are in the process of rolling out bans and composting mandates: Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and California. There is even a ban that applies to large generators that went into effect in 2016 in New York City. Composting on such a massive scale is nothing new. It often surprises people that one of the largest sectors of the composting industry is based on processing organic materials known as biosolids. Biosolids are, yes, human excrement, and everything else that goes into the sewer. This is not your backyard humanure composting system. It's a veritable bio-geo-pharma-chemo-cocktail of everything that is modern humanity. In 2010, an estimated 562,000 dry tons of biosolids were composted annually, which was on par with food scrap composting in the United States in 2014 at 1.94 million wet tons, according to the EPA. Dry tons would be 1/3 to 1/5 of the wet weight of biosolids. Early efforts to develop methods of biosolids composting go back to research conducted by the US EPA in the 1970s, and this industry created the foundation for much of what the composting industry is today. I first encountered a biosolids composting operation in college when my agroecology professor, Tim Cruz, took our class to the Albuquerque Soil Amendments Facility. They composted the solid portion of the city's sewage or sludge after it had gone through an anaerobic digester at the wastewater treatment plant. I was in awe of the 8-foot-tall windrows of composting shit. Shit is not a dirty word in the composting world. And the massive self-propelled windrow turner named after the infamous Egyptian symbol of regeneration, the scarab. And excited by the realization that this was happening, that and the pungent smell of ammonia, NH3, that permeated everything. I don't think that many people knew then or are aware now that massive volumes of anthropogenic nutrients are captured, processed, and then reapplied to the land in this way. Making waste management compatible with our food system. 10+ years after touring the Albuquerque Soil Amendments Facility, I still perceive a disconnection between similar massively scaled organics recycling operations and the goal of producing high-quality local food. To many readers, it may be a given that the composts you produce are intended for food production, but I can assure you, this is commonly not the case. Much as you see with foods in organic agriculture, the scale, localness, distribution, processing, and quality of the composts that are available to the end consumer can vary hugely from producer to producer and product to product. In fact, today's organics recycling is as much a waste management business as it is an agricultural practice. There is sometimes tension between these two sectors, despite the common goal of minimizing waste and conserving resources. In unique cases, operations from the waste industry display an awareness of the needs of agricultural producers. But this is by no means a given, which many in the waste management sector openly admit. While managing food scraps as a high-quality agricultural input holds enormous value, that potential frequently goes unrealized. Instead, composts go on the market that are immature, contain significant plastic nanoparticles, although sometimes the particles are not nano, they are downright macro. Reports range from parts of Dunkin' Donuts cups in compost from a commercial source to a baby doll head in a California farmer's field. Needless to say, that farmer was pretty turned off. Or are commingled with sewage, reducing the options for end use. The emergence of these new products brings up many questions, and their uses must be better understood and targeted appropriately. One 2009 study found a correlation between facility scale and the presence of fecal indicators, bad bugs in human and animal feces, with levels of E. coli and salmonella increasing with facility scale. Another undesirable trend is utilizing water resource recovery facilities, or WRRFs, formerly known as wastewater treatment plants. Combining food scraps with sewage reduces the food scraps' potential end uses, creating an end product that is less marketable and contains traces of everything that went into the sewage system, including heavy metals and industrial wastes. While these approaches keep organics resources out of landfills, the yields of these processes can be highly variable when it comes to their quality as an agricultural input, offsets of greenhouse gas emissions and renewable energy status, and overall net benefit to the environment and society. In cases where the solids fraction coming out of the WRRF are not separated and composted, many people are rightly calling this practice out as composting in name only. There are some key differences and benefits to small-scale composting that I hope will become clearer by the end of this book. Yet until quite recently, depending upon where you live, small-scale producers of high-quality composts have been either the norm or non-existent. The tremendous growth in composting has led to an explosion of composting at all scales, and hence, a stratification of distinct sectors of organics recyclers. In many places, small-scale high-quality producers are non-existent or just now starting to appear. In other places, community-scale composting forged the path, and now laws and other factors have initiated larger operations that potentially threaten smaller producers. All of that said, neither this book nor the community-scale composting movement is about condemning any one sector of organics recyclers. Organics recycling is nuanced, and there is a need for infrastructure that meets the scale of our population, as well as a need for diverse grades of composts for a variety of applications, including non-food producing lands. Instead, community-scale composting's role is to make great, local food system-grade composts and to be a growing model of local, closed-loop ecological principles. How to use this book. As a technical manual, this book is an information-dense resource for use by community-scale composter practitioners when developing composting infrastructure and managing their operations. If you're using it as a reference, you can jump in anywhere to extract a single bit of information. It's also organized in a progression, with steps guiding specific assessment and design processes. Some readers might find the depth of information and complexity intimidating. I'm just as intimidated, more so even, knowing firsthand how much information has been compiled here. But it was my intention to bridge the gap between the highly technical realm of engineers and scientists and that of small-scale practitioners, and to do so in a complete and rigorous manner. I hope that's what my research team and I have done. To make the book as user-friendly as possible, I have made efforts to guide the reader through the process. When you're using this book, there are two tools that might help you organize your thinking. First, there are a series of checklists throughout the design and planning chapters. These can be adapted for your own purposes and used to cross-check the completeness of your planning. Second, the book is organized based on a logical progression that I use for phased project management called the 5 D's. 1. Discover. 2. Define. 3. Design. 4. Develop. 5. Deploy. As a consultant, managing as many as 15 projects at a time, I have found it absolutely critical to have a method for thinking about the phases of taking a new project from concept to implementation. As an introduction to help you use this book effectively, I'll talk about the first 3 D's briefly. Discover. The first phase of a project, Discover, is designed to challenge the original assumptions of a given project. In essence, asking and answering questions to the point where rough concepts become vetted concepts. One of the fundamental uses of this book is to assist the discovery process of your project. Only if you challenge your assumptions, discover the realities, and then adapt your concept appropriately will your project result in functional and sustainable outcomes. Another way that Phase 1 discovery has been very helpful to me as a consultant is in weeding out unpromising projects or concepts before they take up too much of anyone's time. I will greatly limit my involvement in projects that have not undergone a thorough discovery phase and have been known to spend an hour on the phone convincing people that they are not ready to start a composting project. Those same composters may come back to me a year later with their ducks in a row ready to move forward. Define. Define is where you take all of the information generated in discovery and compile it in a way that is useful to you and others working on the project. Before moving forward with detailed designs or purchasing new equipment, I highly recommend that you create a simple written description of the system scale and method or methods, a list of the required permits where applicable, as well as a budget and, ideally, some goals and expected outcomes. There are multiple reasons for this, but the most important is that if you have done a good job in the define phase, you can also be assured that the discovery was adequate and that you are ready for design. Define should force you to identify unanswered questions and make solving them part of your game plan. Design. The majority of this book is devoted to the design of composting operations. However, you may need to reference design sections of the book in other phases and vice versa. Such is the nature of the 5 D's. Use them when they are useful to mapping your project's progress. Ignore them when they are a hindrance. The 5 D's are designed to be somewhat overlapping, although the outputs of each phase are distinct. For example, to develop a budget, you may need to begin a rough design concept in the discovery phase. If any one phase is incomplete, you will likely have to go back to it at some point later in the project. This is usually okay, but it can be frustrating and costly. Chapters 1, 2, and 5 in particular should be helpful in the discovery and define phases. Whose book is this? Although the title of this book speaks most directly to those who already identify themselves as community composters, many readers may just be becoming familiar with this concept. You may be thinking, I just want to make compost. What does my composting operation have to do with community? The reality is that this is a reference on composting with a capital C, with tons of useful information for any composting application. Ultimately, how we categorize composters is not the subject of this book. It will be useful for farmers, dirt lovers, and agro-eco geeks, policymakers, home composters, teachers of composting, compost technical service providers, extension agents, master composters and gardeners, municipal and urban planners, municipalities and public sector waste managers, the waste industry, permaculturalists, ecological designers, activists, community organizers, architects, engineers, international aid workers. The list goes on. Right now, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg of what the community composting movement will ultimately offer our communities, food systems, local and regional economies, and planet. Nora Goldstein, editor of BioCycle magazine and thought leader in the movement, had this to say about the diversity of perspectives in how community composters view their work. One of the community composting movement's greatest strengths is that it doesn't fit into one mold. Yet there is a collective identity that's been coalescing for some time now. Community composters embody the spirit of innovation and creativity, and this helps build the foundation for positive change and civic engagement. Community composters make it possible for households and neighborhood businesses to recycle their food scraps locally to make compost for community gardens, urban farms, and planters. Community composters provide jobs with living wages for youth and adults, and enterprise opportunities that come in all shapes and sizes, from worker-owned co-ops to for-profit businesses offering collection and composting services. It is this very diversity that she has documented within the movement that defines community composting and makes it so strong. And isn't that the nature of community? Another theme present throughout most of the book is the composting of food scraps. Even if you are not a food scrap composter, many parts of this book will still apply to you, because the fundamentals and technical function of composting are the same regardless of the raw materials. My hope is that this book becomes a repository and reference of the highest quality. I have had the honor of learning from some of the very best in both composting and sustainable agriculture. And so it is, humbly and with great admiration, that I acknowledge and thank them for their hard work, dedication, and thought leadership. Similarly, this book is for our most important teachers, the composting practitioners whose models inspire and guide us. Composters, this book is yours. There are no boundaries to confine where this information can be applied. Take it, test it, adapt it, make it your own, and share what you've learned. We hope you've enjoyed this introduction to community-scale composting systems by James McSweeney, available wherever books are sold. James is a composting consultant and educator and can be found at www.composttechnicalservices.com.